Yeah.
Okay. How's everything? Everything's good? And you
yeah,
two are
time
coming
is it?
From up
we've
here?
We've got a clock. Can we
six.
Get a
clock?
Six, right on six?
6:01.
Don't worry.
Okay.
Well, we have nothing to say. That's it.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah.
Remind me to put this back on the wall.
Now, still, we've got to fix this, so, yeah.
I'm just gonna send the clock over here.
Hi, Andy.
Hopefully that works. Actually,
that looks better. All right, so we can do it like this. Put it against it.
And or just even by the wall.
Right? Yeah, just to set it down by the wall.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll shut the door here, and if you need help, then just give us a holler.
Is the audio on already?
Yeah. And what's that again? Okay, it keeps coming in that.
Well, as soon as you touch the remote, then it'll pop up.
So presentation. That's
your computer.
Are you gonna? Can you stay with us for the first half hour or so?
Yeah.
Just.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
In case we run into. Thanks.
Distance.
Okay. Can you hear me? Can you hear me down there? Yeah? And can you transfer around to so I can see James Moore? And is James, can you hear me?
I can
James,
hear you.
James, you're mic'd?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, so are you... I can hear you, but I can't see James Moore. Very flattering image. Yeah. Okay, so here we are. It's, I think, the ninth class. It's March the 15th, 2006. This is Globalization Since 1492. I'm Professor Anthony Hall, and I'm in the building with Professor Alberto Guevara. And Professor Guevara is going to show some slides. A movie. It's going to the title of tonight's lecture, or the main part of tonight's lecture, the main part of the class, is Lethbridge, Nicaragua, and Nepal as sites of globalization through the eyes of Professor Alberto Guevara. And so that's the main subject tonight. Most of you will have met in some way James Moore, who has been taking part in the class. James Moore has a master's in distance education from Athabasca University. And of course, Athabasca University concentrates on distance education. And James is part of Friends of Medicare. And Friends of Medicare, in association with our class, University of Lethbridge, is organizing for May the 29th a special focus on health, on Medicare, and on the proposed changes emanating from the Alberta government. I haven't taken on the subject of globalization and health, but obviously it's a subject that belongs in this context. Diseases, epidemics are no respecters of national boundaries. We saw that with, for instance, SARS. We can see that an organization like the World Health Organization has to be cognizant of global patterns. And as we think about the healthcare issue in Alberta and Canada, I think it's increasingly important that we see this in a broader context. Certainly, the issue of health care as it exists in Canada and health care as it exists in the United States, where much of the health care system is run essentially as a private business, with much emphasis being placed on these for-profit insurance companies. Obviously, it's an entirely different system than in Canada. And some might see Canada as a kind of example that some in the United States would not want to see duplicated, an example of using health as a for-profit business. This was an approach that we thought we'd superseded in the 1960s, but it seems now this is being put in question. So on March the 29th, 2 weeks from now, our hope is that we can get a lot of focus on interactivity, that we can generate some kind of provincial-wide and possibly national discussion on health, that we can use our chat, and that we can develop our capacities for interactivity in real time, the fact that we can have discussions through this medium, global discussions. And James has a lot of theory about this, a lot of ideas about this, and has been working on actually implementing some of these ideas. And so the chat line, this is the first round where we are getting some developments on the chat line. So with that introduction, James, perhaps you could talk about the interactive capacities of what we're doing with this pilot project. Doran called it the other night a pilot project. I think that's a good way to describe it. Research and development in post-secondary education. Can you introduce the subject of the kind of interactivity you're interested in developing in relationship to this event that we're going to mount on March the 29th, James?
Yeah, thanks, Tony. I guess I'd begin by making the first statement is that the only difference, the great difference, between the internet and computer communications and previous forms of media is that the opportunity which is offered with the internet is many-to-many communication. When you look at the other types of media like, you know, television, film, you don't have many-to-many communication. You don't have the possibility. Usually, you even no matter how you know how excellent a television program may be, you're in the position of passivity. You're in the position of reflection, and if you want to do something after that, it's a process of taking another medium, taking another organization. So the potential of the internet is there in that many-to-many communication, but the actualization of the many-to-many communication possibility is something that seems difficult to do from several levels. The many-to-many possibility, first of all, is somewhat preempted by traditional communication, because if you have communication within a form, the form of a hierarchical structure, you're going to have a communication format. Basically, where if you see how, you know, this room is like a half example. But most lecture halls, most situations where you have public communication, you're going to have in the Western society. A situation where there's one person more or less in a position of power, or sometimes a table of people, or a group of people, and they will be speaking to a crowd arranged in electronic, in a rather a rectangular format, usually square format, where all of the rest of the people in the room are looking at the back of each other's heads. And this is sort of the traditional trend going forward. And if you're looking at the role, as it's been explained in this course, of communication, what are you going to do with this possibility? Like, what if everybody can speak to anybody? What if this potential is given to the world? It was given to the world. You know, it's really a new thing. Fascinating reference I have here with regard to some of you have heard the. I'm sure some of you have heard of the Project for the New American Century. Show of hands. Well, it's an interesting document. This document came out of the kind of the realization after the Cold War was over, and the there was a very brief conversation there about what was called the peace dividend, and what should we do with, you know, now that presumably the old argument of having to spend hundreds of billions of dollars every year on weapons was no longer valid, that there would be a lot of leftover money to do something more interesting in terms of how we're going to organize ourselves in the world. But anyway, this was kind of dangerous talk about the peace dividend. So there was a group of people organized on the idea of the Project for the New American Century. Actually, if you can pull it up on a website and have a look anytime you'd like. But I have a reference from that project going forward. Now, if you're going to, once you're the preeminent superpower in the world, are you going to maintain that position going forward into the 21st century? And one of the talk that they had was called Rebuilding America's Defenses, Strategy, Forces, and Resources for a New Century. And then within there, one of the topics is space and cyberspace. And the space and cyberspace, I'll put the document here. How do we do this? Can we come on there, or? I can see, no?
I'll take it down.
Because the reference I want to make, oh, there we go. Do I focus?
It's impossible to read it. You've got to focus in or something.
The zoom here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tony?
Yeah.
While there's a break here, do you guys want to mute your mic on that end until you need to talk?
Yep.
Okay, this is the...
It's just, I think it's the red button.
Something. Can you hear me?
Are we muted now?
No, not yet.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mikey.
If there's some interest, we can talk about space. But they're putting space and cyberspace in the same document, and this aspect of cyberspace here. It says. If outer space represents an emerging medium of warfare, then cyberspace, and in particular the internet, holds similar promise and threat. And as with space, access to and use of cyberspace and the internet are emerging elements in global commerce, politics, and power. Any nation wishing to assert itself globally must take account of this other new global commons. And the second paragraph I find even more interesting. The internet is also playing an increasingly important role in warfare and human political conflict. From the early use of the internet by Zapatista insurgents in Mexico to the war in Kosovo, communication by computer has added a new dimension to warfare. And then it goes on about how their major concern is about being able to destroy other people's computer systems while not having theirs destroyed. But I want to refer to the early use of the internet by Zapatista insurgents in Mexico. I want to get to that point. And the reason why is, in 1994, on New Year's Day, when the world became aware of the Zapatistas, it was astonishing how they were able to use the internet and to actually get a reference in the, at this high level of in America. they were really busy with this many-to-many communication, this kind of possibility that normally is some of the academic arguments, if I'll just go there to you know, the formal study of distance education, and is that when you know, you're speaking about actualizing the potential, the word interactivity always appears as ideal, as, you know, this is the real advantage, this is what we need, this is how it's going to work. But it also seems that the same time as that's said, the reality is that a lot of, you know, the way the world is structured, a lot of institutions have a lot of difficulty with actually, you know, going to the implementation of actualizing the potential, because it tends to lead to what you might term as loss of control, or at least the fear of loss of control. And this is really sort of a break, a constraint on actualizing that potential, because if you have many-to-many interactions going on, then you have, you know, like, who's going to monitor all this? Who's going to be able to decide? Well, the point is, you're not. That's why the Zapatistas were so successful. They were able to mobilize the world's resources using a dramatically new tool. This is really the first use that I know of that took the power of the internet and took it to the point where one of the I guess gurus in the field, Clay Shirky, who often has some very interesting pithy comments about the subject, he says, and we can term all of these things like the social software, the chat line, you know, all of the many-to-many communication possibilities can be termed social software. That's his word. And he has a saying where he says social software is political science in executable form. And it's really interesting. So anyway, rolling back to our use of the internet in this course, I've made some observations and some suggestions going along. You know, you've seen me in the class and things like that. And as far as where we're leading to in the 29th, the 29th is to focus on the actions of the government of Alberta, which we're all aware of recently. I think that this attempt, which has been kind of festering for quite a long time, it seems, to privatize Medicare. And as a way of focusing and organizing ourselves, we have this chat line, which is, I would think, exists as a potential.
James, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you walk us now through the chat? Just show it to us.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe 3-4 minutes more. We had a sort of crisis here with a computer, but we seem to be up and running again, so we're geared to go.
Okay. I don't know. Are you all on the chat? You use the chat sometimes with us when you have a laptop with you.
So can we go over to and see the computer, Alyssa? All right. Or maybe you can see it in the room. I can't.
There's some inside communication going on here about organizing the chat, and participants are...
Can you see the computer in the classroom? No. Is there a screen where you can see the computer?
Just give me 1 second, please.
Sure.
The thing about a chat, like the textual chat coming in, what we have here as the potential is the video cast going out, so anyway, or America has the option, or the world has the option to, at home on their computer, watch the class. The other part is the only input, the many-to-many part that we have available, that's openly available to anyone sitting anywhere on the computer, is the textual chat. We don't have an audio connection. But within the texting medium, there's ways that, like, if you're greeting people as you come in, whoever comes into the room.
Can you take us into the site? Can you just go back a step, so you take us right to this window, the procedures that led you to get to this window?
Do you want me to do that, or?
If you can.
Is that my screen up there?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're watching.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Oh, just basically come into your video conferencing. Now, the presumption is that there's people watching outside who haven't done this, but.
But say you're coming into, you know, Watch Now, Globalization Studies, Watch Now. Let's even go back to the entry point.
Okay. Well, I think I got in the entry point by typing it in.
Okay.
There, we're coming to the website. So if someone's at the website, the Watch Now link brings the video feed to them, and then their interactive point is clicking here to join the chat. And
okay.
I'm already logged in. So I have to just click on the globalization. You're given a space to put in your name. Once you put in your name, you're logged in. Now, this link, you can see the Alberta symbol there, the video conference link. It can only be used from inside Alberta, from my experimentation, because I've asked people outside of Alberta to set up a chat. They can't set up a chat using this, but what they can all do is join a chat that's set up inside Alberta. And this is one of the Alberta products which the government of Alberta has invested, seeing some of the potential of the internet.
That was my fault.
But this internet this internet potential works in many ways. We find that in the arena of actualization of the potential, that a huge amount of energy is going into you know, business-minded. You'll see whole realms of data on how to use it to maximize productivity. People all over the world are using it for their own ends, for sharing, for organizing. And our intention, our expectation, because we want you as well to, you know, if you've got a friend in Chile or anywhere, then let them know that on the 29th of this month at 6 to 9 Mountain Standard Time, we're actually going to be inviting the world, Alberta, to join in this room, because if you're studying globalization, then it gives us an opportunity to invite the people to come in. Now, if you're chatting in this chat line, when you get active inside it, you'll often find that there's, you know, sometimes termed threads of thought, threads of conversation that become quite fascinating. Right now,
yeah. I think we get the idea, James.
Okay.
I think we get the idea. I can't quite read the screen. I can see your name. I think I can see Melanie's name. What's going on in the discussion? Is there an actual discussion happening now?
I'm mainly talking. There's some interaction
between
U of L. Melanie. Melanie's made
room.
A few comments to me.
Is Lucan there?
Lucan.
Yeah, there's Lucan.
Lucan said the stream is shut down and she'll try again on the way back.
So Lucan is our student in Ottawa.
Yeah.
Well, I think we get the general idea, James. Maybe you can wrap up in a couple of minutes and then I'll introduce Alberto.
Okay. So to wrap up, there's going to be a number of actions in Lethbridge. The 27th, there's going to be a meeting. The 29th is our attempt to disseminate the information, to invite communication, to tell what we're up to. The 30th is a book coming forward about the economics of privatizing healthcare. And on the 1st, April 1st, is a rally in Galt Gardens at 1:30. Bring your umbrellas. It's a new word. This is a symbol for are you covered? I'm expecting everyone to be there. 1:30, Galt Gardens. And I think, you know, what we're doing here, we're going to demonstrate that we're not isolated. I'm sure that everybody's watching Alberta in a sense because, you know, we're the kind of the point that they're taking to try this
rich.
Breaking of Medicare. And so, you know, we'll be watched and we have to have a successful reaction. And I think that, you know, this is the point where, you know, we're going to be able to explore the possibilities of the internet and link them to what we're doing in an action and then reflect on them and come back. So.
Okay, James, thank you very much. And we'll look forward to 2 weeks from now and we'll see what we can pull together. And thank you very much for that presentation and all that you're bringing to the public education around these issues. I think it interesting that Alberta was the site of much experimentation in the deregulation of energy. And that, of course, was the main agenda pushed by a little company called Enron. And the excesses of Enron and the internal contradictions within Enron, the lies and the deceit and the abuse of the system are now just coming to light. But a really unpublicized aspect of Enron's history is that much of this experimentation in the deregulation of energy prices took place in Alberta. And I believe Jim Dinning was quite involved. He was involved in New Zealand, where a lot of this experimentation took place in deregulation, neoliberal privatization. And Don Hill was talking about this a lot on his CBC radio phone-in show, Wild Rose Forum. And suddenly he was taken off the air for whatever reason. The CBC said he was redundant. He believed that it had something to do with this story he was bringing to light. So he would repeat it again and again. He has done the class, this globalization studies class, that Alberta is a kind of laboratory and a kind of test tube for a lot of things. And it's interesting that just at a time when Alberta could afford to be providing, say, free education and the best healthcare in the world, as a right of citizenship rather than transforming it into a business and therefore suggesting and creating a situation where those with money will get better health care. It'll be two-tiered or three-tiered or 10-tiered, depending on you know, how wealthy you are. So that this really goes against a Canadian principle that some would say has become integral, basic to our citizenship, that as Canadian citizens, we don't use healthcare as a point of division between rich and poor. We recognize as a community that we share responsibility for one another. And with that, I'll shift gear, and maybe Alyssa, if you can shift the camera so I can be seeing the class as I'm talking up here in the link, up in the 11th floor of the library here, and if you can pull back so I can see the whole room. I'm very pleased and honored to introduce Alberto Guevara. Alberto Guevara, Professor Guevara, Dr. Guevara, is in the anthropology department at the University of Lethbridge and has a PhD from Concordia, an interdisciplinary PhD in cultural, social anthropology, communication, and performance. And tonight, Alberto is going to share with us some of his field work, the results of his field work he's been doing in, could I say, revolutionary theater in Nepal, in Lethbridge. And this goes back to the early 1980s when Dr. Guevara was part of the Sandinista Revolution, the communist revolution in Nicaragua.
Socialist
revolution in Nicaragua. You're afraid of the word, or? Anyway,
it was socialist because it had a mixed economy, and it was trying to accommodate some other sectors in the population, so it was not entirely communist.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the word is a loaded term.
We could discuss that.
Yeah. and really, there's only been three successful revolutions in response to the American Empire, or the hegemony of the United States in the Western Hemisphere. And the first of those was in Mexico in the early part of the 20th century, and that revolution for a time was quite active and vital. We talked about the Zapatistas. Zapata was, of course, one of the heroes of the revolution. That revolution was eventually co-opted and, in a sense, institutionalized and became a rather corrupt regime that dominated power in Mexico. The other revolution, of course, is in Cuba in 1958-59. And then in the 1979, there was the revolution against a very repressive regime, a long-standing dictatorial regime, the Somoza regime in Nicaragua. Nicaragua is one of the areas where the U.S. Marines have intervened repeatedly, and so there was a powerful response. Dr. Guevara's role was in the Army as a part of the dramatic corps, the idea of using drama and theater and performance as a way to boost morale in the Army, to educate within the revolution about the goals of the revolution, to animate and liberate human creativity of all sorts within this revolutionary context. And so this is, I think, a very unusual and special experience, and one that I would certainly like to understand much better. And so with that introduction, I'll let you present it in your own terms. We're going to show a movie tonight. It's called TV Heads. We're going to see how an event that I was involved with in Lethbridge affected people in Nepal and is part of your ongoing field work in Nepal. And I look forward to the possibility that we'll eventually meet these folks you're working with in Nepal, an NGO that represents essentially untouchables. Nepal is on the border of China and India. It's a very economically depressed country in some ways. It's also a country where there's a lot of revolutionary ferment. China has had a big impact. There is
Mao has had an impact, but the government of China is not helping the revolutionaries there. So
okay, I'm obviously getting things not quite right in the nuance here and there. So I'll
it's okay.
I'm pleased that you're here and welcome to Globalization Since 1492 and the Axis of Enlightenment, and I look forward to spending an hour or an hour and a half or so, and let's see what we can come up with.
Thank you very much. I mean, I didn't structure this presentation as a lecture or anything, but I would like to take the opportunity to talk about globalization through my own experience. First of all, my experience in Nicaragua during the Sandinista Revolution and how that experience helped me, shape me in the way I conduct my ethnographic work. I am fundamentally an anthropologist who is interested in understanding social interaction, structures of power, structures of violence, through performance. Okay, so I study performance as a way of understanding cultural relations and social relations. So I would like to take the opportunity here to say something against what is called by some scholars, particularly Gomez Peña, who is a performance artist, Mexican-American, talking about corporate globalization, okay, in which everything seems to be thrown on TV and the media. Okay, you can see almost anything. You don't know what's real, what's not, but everything is presented as the actual reality. Against that, contrary to that idea of globalization, I would like to tell you a story of my experience involved in the trying to understand theater, trying to understand performance, trying to understand culture. So my story is a story of experience and connectivity, that we can call it globalization in a contrary to that corporate globalization that has commodified almost everything in our cultures. So the story of experience that I'm going to talk to you about, I'm going to starts in Nicaragua in the 1980s during the Sandinista Revolution. In 1982, I was part of, in 1980, I started to participate in a revolution through the literacy campaign, a very successful literacy campaign organized by the Sandinista administration, who took power in 1979 by deposing one of the cruelest and longest living dictatorships in Latin America in history. So I started during the literacy campaign by organizing theater groups, okay, by trying to talk about the problematic. I was only 14 years old at that point. And then after the literacy campaign, there were other tasks that I did through theater. For example, going through, as you were saying, organizing cultural brigades to bring entertainment to the troops and also a political message, okay, that what they were doing, especially in the mountains, fighting against the contra-revolutionaries was a great thing, okay? So then I started working in theater with a theater company, and what we did was try to create a link through theater between the rural populations and the urban populations. The urban population in Nicaragua didn't know anything about what was happening in the mountains. And the people in the mountains, peasants, didn't know what was going on in the cities. So it was a great opportunity for me as a young person to participate in these cultural brigades, trying to understand the problematic of the peasants, why they didn't understand people in the cities, et cetera, et cetera.
And I guess the Sandinistas, the history of the Sandinistas was urban intellectuals, university intellectuals, but then the view is you can't succeed just in among a bourgeois audience. You can't mobilize the people from that stance. You have to go into the countryside, try to persuade the peasantry, join
it was,
in the spirit of.
It was more complicated than that, in the sense that the Sandinistas actually had done a lot of work. They were split into three factions. One of them was working with the peasants. Actually, that was the whole idea of revolutionary struggle was to be with the peasants. It was a faction of the Sandinistas that was inspired by the Vietnamese, okay, by the Vietnam Revolution.
By Ho Chi Minh.
Yeah, exactly. So, and so you have to live with the peasants, you have to actually struggle with them and become a new man through that struggle. There was another faction that worked with the workers and urban populations, and another faction that actually believed that you have to connect with the bourgeoisie in order to obtain victory. Okay, you have to kind of create an strategic alliance with the bourgeoisie in order to win. And that's the main core of the revolution became that you had to kind of become plural, in a sense, to listen to every position in the land, but never forgetting that the struggle was for the poor. So that was the case. So so we went to the mountains because there were still misunderstandings. Okay? The majority of the people in the army were people from urban populations. For example, those who directed the revolution were urban people, as you were saying. So there were misunderstandings. The peasants still didn't know what was going on in the country and if something good was for them. So we created this connection with theater, and that's how I became interested when I came to Canada to continue trying to understand the role of theater, the role of performance in social relations, in gender relations, in class relation, and so on. When I came here, okay, so I did my studies at York University, at Concordia University, and then I got this job teaching anthropology. And so I decided with some other professors, you included, and some students, to organize a performance group in order to try to create awareness or to create discussions about some particular issue. And it turned out to be an issue of the media. And so that's the connection. I came with this desire to do theater, to create performances that are kind of critical, and I did that kind of work in Montreal, in Toronto, and then here. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to do this, and I'd like to show you the film, a little 12-minute film that talks about this experience in Lethbridge a year ago. I'll tell you when to start. If you have questions in the meantime, I will be happy to answer questions.